On the air, online, from New York City, border to border, and coast to coast, you're connected with Tom Sullivan.
Yes, you are, and thank you for coming by. Welcome to the big radio show. Happy Wednesday to you on this ninth day of September, 9-9 of 2020. My name is Tom Sullivan. So, the president, we stopped the tape so that we'll pick it up just right where we need to be, but he came out a few minutes ago, and this was a planned event where he was going to announce his list of names for people that if he is reelected, that they are on his list of possible appointees to the United States Supreme Court. He did this in 2016, and he has refreshed the list, and he went through the whole process of if Joe Biden's elected and he gets to nominate the Supreme Court justices, they're going to ruin the country, and it'll all be horrible, and everything will be terrible. So he goes through and he gives this list and then comes to the conclusion. He says, does anybody have any questions about the justices or the judges I've named? Quiet as a church. Nobody had a thing. He says, are there any other questions? Mr. President, Mr. President. And they were all yelling. They all wanted to ask about the Woodward tapes. So here is the president picking up the first question on Bob Woodward's tapes.
Whether did you mislead the public by saying that you downplayed the coronavirus and that you repeatedly did that in order to reduce panic? Did you mislead the public?
Well, I think if you said in order to reduce panic, perhaps that's so. The fact is I'm a cheerleader for this country. I love our country. And I don't want people to be frightened. I don't want to create panic, as you say. And certainly I'm not going to drive this country or the world into a frenzy. We want to show confidence. We want to show strength. We want to show strength as a nation. And that's what I've done. And we've done very well. We've done well from any standard. You look at our numbers compared to other countries, other parts of the world. It's been an amazing job that we've done. I think it's very sad in many respects because the incredible individuals working so hard on it, including our vice president, they've done this great job. They haven't been acknowledged by the news media, and they should, for the job we've done, whether it's ventilators, and now you'll see very soon with vaccines and with therapeutics, the job we've done has been incredible. But we don't want to instill panic. We don't want to jump up and down and start shouting that we have a problem that is a tremendous problem, scare everybody. And I'll tell you the other thing, we immediately started buying all over the world. We started buying masks and gowns and everything else. And we don't want to cause pricing to go up to a level that becomes almost unaffordable. So, yeah, in that sense, I agree with it. Yeah, please.
How do you reassure the American public going forward that they can trust what you're saying?
Well, I think that's really a big part of trust. We have to have leadership. We have to show leadership. And the last thing you want to do is create a panic in the country. This was a horrible thing. It was sent to us by China. Should not have happened. Should never have happened. This is a disgusting, terrible situation that was foisted upon us, and we have to show, we just don't want to use, the best word is panic. We don't want to have to show panic. We're not going to show panic. And that's exactly what I did. And I was very open, whether it's to Woodward or anybody else. It's just another political hit job. But whether it was Woodward or anybody else, you cannot show a sense of panic, or you're going to have bigger problems than you ever had before. Please.
Respectfully, sir, your comment announcements were more than trying to reduce panic, sir. On February 7th, you told Woodward it's more deadly than your strenuous flu.
Go ahead, please.
Mr. President, don't you think if you were more forthright with the American people, more lives could have been saved? Do you take responsibility at all for some of the 200,000 deaths that we've had?
So I think if we didn't do what we did, we would have had millions of people die. We closed up our country. We closed it up very, very quickly, very effectively. We did a job. We learned about this horrible disease along with the rest of the world, which had to learn about it. And then we opened it up. And now we know the vulnerable. We know who it attacks, who it's so vicious against. And I think we've done from every standpoint a incredible job. We shouldn't have lost anybody. Nobody should have lost. China released something that they shouldn't have been allowed to they should not have released. It came out of China. It went to Europe. It went all over the world. Should have never happened. They could have stopped it. They stopped it from going into the remainder of China. It started in Wuhan, and they stopped it. But they didn't stop it from coming to our country. Now, we had to show calm. We had to show, you know, if it was up to you or whoever, I have no idea what he said in the book. And again, it's a book that I gave him some quotes, and frankly, we'll see how the book turned out. I have no idea. You're asking me questions for the first time. But again, the last thing we can show is panic or excitement or fear or anything else. We had to take care of the situation we were given. Now, long before anybody else wanted to do it, I closed our borders to a very heavily infected China. If I didn't do that, we would have had hundreds of thousands more people die. Dr. Fauci said it. Many people said it. It was a great decision. It was a decision I made, and I had to make. It was a decision that a lot of people thought I was wrong. Nancy Pelosi said I was wrong. Joe Biden said I was wrong. They all came back, and they said it was the right decision. And I was way early. That was in January, the end of January I did that. So that was a very good thing we did. Otherwise, we would have had hundreds of thousands more. But if we didn't close the country, we would have been talking about millions of people instead of the numbers that we have right now.
All right. So there's the president. It kind of goes around and around and around on that same point. But I think this is really Monday morning quarterbacking. And one of the things, I don't know if this is your sense of the man. My sense of him is exactly what he said. He says he is a cheerleader for this country. And he said, basically implied that, we've had great results because of that. That's just him. When he was a real estate guy, he was always, this is the best, this is the most terrific, this you will not find anything better than this new hotel, this new building, this is the best ever. We know that about him. People laugh or make little jokes about, oh, the best, the brightest of the, everything's incredible. So that's kind of the way he is. So they present to him this information. Robert O'Brien, the national security executive, says, Mr. President, this is a major, major problem. It's going to affect our country and affect the world. And he took it seriously, and that's why he did the China. Well, it wasn't complete, but he thought, you know, he gave the orders to shut down the immigration from China and then Canada and Mexico and Europe. I don't know if anybody really grasped how big or how bad this was. The only if my critique is, I wish he would put the cheerleading aside on something like this. But then we get into these degrees about, would he have panicked people? We're made up of a lot of different sensitivities. Everybody's sensitivity is different in this country. And if he came out and said, listen, we have something that is going to be horrible. It's going to be deadly, and it's going to be massive. And people would be hiding under their beds. What I don't understand is that if he does, and I now know he does understand how serious and how infectious and how deadly this is, then why doesn't he have, he did it, by the way, between February 1st and, where was the other date I got here? He held a whole bunch of rallies. I want to say there were 10 rallies that he held. And I go, that also drives him. That's part of him. It drives him so much. And so he needs that response from the crowd. And so he went ahead and had rallies when he knew that this thing was very contagious and very deadly. So I don't understand that part. I don't understand why he still has rallies like he did last night in Winston-Salem with people and not stopping and saying, hey, people, spread out, please. Let's get some distancing. And would everybody please put on a mask? I would be tickled pink if he did that. It would show how concerned he is. He doesn't have to panic people. So it's Monday morning quarterbacking, and it's always he did this too little, or he did this too late, or he did this too much, or he didn't do enough of that. I get that. That is how he's going. I said it before when the first back in March, I was talking about there's no way to do this perfectly. So my critique is I wish he would have been more serious. I wish he would have shared more. But I don't panic easily either. Maybe other people do. That was his call. And people are going to judge him on whether he was too light or too harsh come November 3rd. Phone number here is 855-295-6600. Paul in Missouri. Paul, hi. You're on the Tom Sullivan Show.
Thank you, Tom. Enjoy listening to your talk show, first-time caller.
Thank you.
One quick comment that I want to make is you asked the question if Joe Biden would have done anything different than the president did.
Right, right.
When President Trump closed down the country from international travel from China, Joe Biden called him a racist and xenophobe and every other name in the book.
Right.
When he closed the travel ban down. So I guess, yes, he would have done something different than the president, which would have been putting the country, you know, at very large risk.
You know, the thing we face every 4 years, Paul, every 4 years we face this. And candidates always talk about taxes and the economy and foreign affairs. But one of the things that we never know and they don't know is that what will happen in the next 4 years that will come out of the blue that they're going to have to handle. And there's no way to predict that. So you and I try and get a sense of the candidate on how they will handle something that is new and popped up in front of them. Just part of what we go through. Anyway, I got to hit my break, but Paul, I'm glad you called. And yeah, what you said about Joe Biden, 100% accurate.
Your screener is the rudest person I have ever heard in my life.
You have probably the best call screener in radio.
Well, we, I'm focusing on me, but we have some good news. Governor Cuomo announced that New York City restaurants will be allowed to have patrons indoors starting September 30th, up to a maximum of 25% of capacity. And I don't know if a restaurant can make money on 25% capacity, but the reason September 30th is the effective date, I'm thinking, why don't you do it now? But it's because outdoor dining won't work when it's cold outside. And even those heaters can only heat so much. I mean, if it starts getting cold around October 1st. So that's a start. We'll see where they go from there. Carl Rove chimed in on all of this a little while ago. And well, let's listen. This is Carl's assessment of the tapes from Bob Woodward.
Well, that's one way of looking at it, and certainly, but again, you know, if the president doesn't know everything to a certainty, then err on the side of caution. And maybe you could make the argument that he should have said masks and social distancing earlier as a result of that, particularly if he knew that it was aerosol-borne. But again, mm-hmm. You know, we expect perfection from people in places where perfection is not possible. And dealing with pandemics is a place where, in particular, The unknowns are large and difficult to deal with. What if the president had said at that point things that had sparked a panic? We'd now be looking back and saying he should have been more measured. So, you know, look, is any president in dealing with a situation like this is going to look back and say there are things I've done differently? But when it gets injected into a partisan environment like we are in the last 55 days of a presidential election, I think a lot of this is going to be partisan, screaming and shouting and not really effective to helping move us forward as a country. Do people say things that, do you think Joe Biden was comfortable that his advisors like Susan Rice and Ron Klain and Ezekiel Emanuel were downplaying this all and dismissing it at a time when the administration was taking tough steps? Do you think he would, in a moment of quiet, would say, I wish they hadn't said those things, and I wish I hadn't listened to those things. I wish I'd asked differently. I suspect the same is true of President Trump as well. I think he would look back and say, I wish I had done this or that slightly differently. But these are not easy situations to deal with and to require perfection of anybody in this, whether it's Joe Biden or Donald Trump, I think is unfair.
Coming from a guy who worked in the White House, Dr. Zeke Emanuel, who hangs out on the left side of the aisle, of course, was critical of the president.
And I think this goes back to the, modus operandi of this president, which is to deny the facts, pretend they don't exist, and suggest to people that they can go around and have life as normal in the face of a huge infectious threat and potential catastrophe. So the idea that he didn't know, the idea that he wasn't told, he was lying to the American public and he was deceiving them about the seriousness of that threat. That is not leadership, and that's not a leader we need when we're facing one of the most catastrophic threats, certainly in decades and decades. And we do need a leader who can look at the facts, marshal the federal government's tremendous resources, and lead the country. And we know this can be done. How do we know it can be done? We can look at other countries that face similar, the COVID crisis. Italy had a terrible outbreak, lots of people early on in March. But by the end of May, very, very little transmission, much fewer deaths. In fact, if we followed Italy's lead, tens of thousands of Americans would be alive today that unfortunately died. That's what burying your head in the sand gets you in the face of scientific facts. And the president can no longer claim he didn't know. No one told him.
No, he did know. He was trying to keep the country from panic. So there's Karl Rove going, look, you can't expect perfection in something like this. And do you look back and go, I could have done something different? Sure. So Zeke Emanuel is a layup for him because you can look and go, wow, there's 180 some thousand people that are dead. Could it have been less? Well, coulda, woulda, shoulda, doesn't apply. I mean, I don't think this is going to make any difference. I really don't. When we come back, take a short break. And when we come back, Dr. Fauci weighs in on the Woodward tapes and how the president reacted to managing the virus. When we come back. I've been promising all along that we get to Dr. Fauci, and they grabbed Fauci and brought him before a microphone here an hour and a half, 2 hours ago. And first question was, well, the Woodward tapes, I mean, do you think the president distorted the information that he was given? Here's Dr. Fauci.
I don't recall anything different than in our discussions that we had with the president, that he said things quite similar publicly. So I didn't read the book. I didn't really go over any of the text since it just came out. But, you know, when in my discussions and the discussions of other task force members with the president, we're talking about the reality of what was going on. And then when we would get up in front of the press conferences, which were very, very common after our discussions with the president, he really didn't say anything different than we discussed when we were with him. So I may not be tuned in to the right thing that they're talking about, but I didn't really see any discrepancies between what he told us and what we told him and what he ultimately came out publicly and said.
So did you get a sense that he was or wasn't playing this down?
No, I didn't. I didn't get any sense that he was distorting anything. I mean, in my discussions with him, they were always straightforward about the concerns that we had. We related that to him. And when he would go out, I'd hear him discussing the same sort of things. He would often say, we just got through with a briefing with the group from the task force and would talk about it. So, no, it may have happened, but I have not seen that kind of distortion.
Interesting. So very, very, very supportive. How about, was Trump actively trying to downplay the virus, Dr. Fauci? Here's his
answer. I really
am
hesitant to comment on that because I don't know in what context we're asking that question. I mean, obviously, when we would be speaking to the president, we talk about the cold facts. He would get them. You know, often he would want to, you know, make sure that the country doesn't get down and out about things. But I don't recall anything that was any gross distortion in things that I spoke to him about.
Right. So you were comfortable.
I don't think he ever distorted things that I spoke to him about.
Mm-hmm. So you were comfortable with the way that he was delivering the information that was discussed in the task force to the public?
Yeah, but remember, I'm a small frame in the big picture of what goes on. But, you know, I would go in, we would, Dr. Birx and I and Dr. Redfield, we would talk to him about the things that were going on out there. And then we would get up. I know you were in the audience often. We would get up and go in front of the cameras and talk a little bit about what the discussions were. And within that context, John, I don't think he said much different than what we said when we were in the Oval Office.
Interesting. I was kind of surprised, actually, by his answer. 855-295-6600, John in Quincy, Illinois. Hello, John.
It's everybody's been warned to put the mask on and keep the distance and so on.
Right.
At the same time, if on the last month or so, you watch television and the beaches and the bars and the meetings and all the different things. People are just crawling over people, just like bees swarming.
Yeah.
How many times do you have to tell them? They have no self-responsibility. So you can't blame that on the president. Some of them, you know, they want you to bring the mask and put it on them.
I think about the crowds that we see on the beaches or wherever they are in bars. And I'll probably insult all the people that are I'm a former smoker from a long time ago. But, you know, you see people smoking and yet you know that medical science says, oh, this is really bad for you. But people smoke, partially because they like it and others would like to quit but have a hard time. So I look at these crowds and we kind of do whatever makes us feel good. We don't want to have to do something that is any restriction on the most amount of pleasure that you can get. Because,
still can't blame
of course,
the
beach is nice. No, it's, of course not. Well, you can't blame the president. Look at I'm glad you said that. I'm glad you said that because there's already in my wheelhouse where I follow economic news and stats and everything else, they're already distorting the numbers about the economy. The left, the Joe Biden crowd is saying, why in the we handed off a perfectly good economy and immediately. You know, he's lost more jobs than anybody, any president ever in the history of. Well, it's because of he shut the economy down. That's why. It wasn't like a bad business environment. And on the other hand, the president and all his people say, why we are seen record growth in our jobs. Yeah, but they're still 50% below because they have to come out of a deep hole. So there's lots of distortions going on, lots of distortions. But bottom line is this is not the president's fault. He was handed a goose that gave him a goose egg, and he had to figure out what to do with it. And that's how people are going to judge him. And people that like him are going to say he did great. People that don't like him say he did a terrible job. It's always those undecideds in the middle, John. That's who they're talking. That's who they're trying to talk to. Swing them over.
Well, it's
and I don't have any idea.
Right down to it. People just aren't.
Well, the people on the beach. Yeah, they're being totally irresponsible. I mean, if you really support the president, you would not go into those. I mean, this is what gets me about the crowd that goes to his rallies. You would say, let's keep social distance. Let's make sure that we don't, let's get rid of this virus. Maybe we can get rid of the virus if we don't keep spreading it from person to person to person. So it is irresponsible, and the president's not responsible for the virus, but he's going to be judged. Like I said,
okay then.
It's one of those, later on, of course you can criticize him. Did too much, did too little. It's Goldilocks. How do you get it just right? I think Karl Rove was right. There's no such thing as perfection. When you look back, you go, maybe I should have done that differently. I think we can all say that about whatever in our lives. So, I don't think it'll make a difference to you.
No.
Yeah, I don't think so. All right, John, thank you. Dennis, Port St. Lucie, Florida. Hello, Dennis.
John, how you doing, sir?
Doing good.
Can you hear me?
What's your take on this?
Okay.
Yo, loud and clear.
As you know, Fauci is the one who said, "Don't worry about anything. You got nothing to worry about." Pelosi said, "Go to Chinatown." Blah blah blah. So you said, "What would Joe Biden do?" Well, here's what Joe Biden would do, which is, he already said if he becomes president, he's going to keep Fauci on. So we'll move Biden into that position that. He's now working with Fauci, and Fauci told him the same thing that he told Trump. What's the difference?
Right.
What would Biden do?
Right.
What would Biden do different? Now, Biden
probably you might nibble at the edges, the margins, but probably the same thing. I'm guessing.
Yeah,
what would you do?
Scientist. Well, there you go. Okay, so here we go. Now, you got Biden, who's doing now a commercial about he's so ticked off about the military, what Trump allegedly said, and so on and whatever.
Right.
Well,
right.
Back in their time, Obama and Joe Biden, four soldiers died. I have their names and their ages and when they died. And because of the government shutdown, their $250 burial monies was not going to be paid because of the government shutdown.
Yeah, I know. Okay. All right, I got to hit a break, but all right, Dennis, thank you. We'll take a short break. I want to talk to you also about this vaccine trial is having a problem. We'll be right back.
That's all that I bring to this microphone every day. I have a huge disdain for politicians, and I don't care for either party.
A little more Fauci, but this time it is because if the news that is out today is that AstraZeneca, one of the big companies that was in the finals, and they have run into a problem. And the problem, they've got that one of the people in the AstraZeneca trial has come down. The news early this morning came down with some illness. that they're trying to figure out whether or not this was because of the vaccine or because, hey, there's 30,000 people in the trial. People get sick. Maybe the guy just or gal, whoever it is, got sick. I don't, you know, we got to find out. Maybe that's all it was the whatever made him ill caused by the vaccine. Well, it's not just they got a headache. Apparently, what's coming out is that they got transverse myelitis. So I, being the medical expert that I am, looked it up on the Mayo Clinic site, and it says transverse myelitis is an inflammation of both sides of one section of the spinal cord. It's a neurological disorder, often damages the insulating material covering your nerve cells. It interrupts the messages that the spinal cord nerves send throughout the body. This can cause pain, muscle weakness, paralysis, sensory problems, or bladder and bowel dysfunction. Sounds lovely. So then they go on about all the various causes and everything else. And the question is it curable? And I think what it really comes down to, it depends. So this is why when people say, would you volunteer to go take one of these experimental vaccines, you're going, I don't know. I mean, if you get something that's not maybe not curable. So they asked Dr. Fauci about this AstraZeneca issue and what this means for the ongoing trials.
What it means is that if this plays out the way I've seen a similar scenario play out with other vaccines, what they will do is they will pause the trial. They would alert people to make sure they really now pay attention to the possibility, and then they will slowly resume the trial to make sure that you don't see another episode. Now, if you see another two or three or four, then I think it's going to be a real problem for the trial. But a single episode of a severe adverse event is important enough to cause a pause in the trial, but very likely they will now cautiously continue after they do the appropriate investigation.
Yeah. So back to the Mayo Clinic. Treatment for transverse myelitis includes medications and rehabilitative therapy. Most people with transverse myelitis recover at least partially. Those with severe attacks sometimes are left with major disabilities. So we're not playing around here. This is not, you know, gosh, I got a rash on my arm. No, this is big time illness. So back to Dr. Fauci, what about the other companies that are also in the final testing phase three of the virus?
No, because, John, you're talking about one particular candidate, and I don't think you can apply across the board the adverse event with one particular platform with the other six that are being essentially implemented right now in various stages of the trial. I mean, you want to stay heads up with the others, but this doesn't impugn the others in any way.
Well, I hope not. I hope they are. I mean, we're all rooting for a vaccine. But at the same time, he went on to talk about there's something like six candidates right now that are in the finals for approval by the FDA. And I forget the number he said now, but it was many, many, many more therapeutics that are in the finals with the FDA. And I can't predict what will happen, but I would be fine with the therapeutic. We talked a little bit about this nano something or other yesterday they were talking about, and how if you get COVID-19, you go to the doctor, they test you. Oh, yes, you are positive. Here, take this pill. 24 hours later, you're fine. the virus is dead. It's been completely stopped in its tracks. It's not going to be able to replicate. And I think that not only solves your problem, but it also solves the problem of spreading it to other people. So I, out of the, I don't know, 20 some therapies that are being looked at by the FDA in the final trials. So they had to ask, I mean, I think we're going to get something here. It's going to make 2021 a much, much brighter year. Government pressure, the political pressure on the scientists and the doctors. So Dr. Fauci, what about the pressure that you're getting from the politicians?
That I would never be muzzled about anything when it comes to science and evidence and the facts. And there is a process that's going on right now, and I think we just mentioned it with how quickly a trial was put on hold when there was an adverse event, that the process that's going on in trying to prove the safety and the efficacy of a number of vaccines is a sound process. I have faith in it. There are outside boards, data and safety monitoring boards. There are committees that advise the FDA about this. So I have confidence that things are going to be done in a scientifically sound manner.
Well, I hope so, too. I have, throughout all of this, I don't know, I could be dead wrong. Fauci seems like he's a pretty straight guy. I mean, he's just, he has survived through administration and administration and administration. So he knows about the politics and everything else. But this is probably the most focus on him and his approvals of things in his whole career. I mean, we haven't had a pandemic in his lifetime. So this is all brand new. And the politicians are trying to figure out what to do. Oh, by the way, Bob Woodward is going to be on 60 Minutes on Sunday. Yeah, he's already taped an interview about his book, and he's won a couple Pulitzers. But anyway, he's going to be on 60 Minutes for his first interview, all about his book, Rage. So set that aside for Sunday night.